Good evening, wherever you are. Thank you very much for joining us on the Just Like the Movies podcast. We are sorry we were delayed for a week, but I had business stuff to do. I was being a business pro on the road, and I was staying in hotels where I hit a certain status, and like maybe they don't, you know, press charges when you awkwardly, you know, proposition the maids. That didn't happen. None of that happened. But I'm just trying to set the tone for the raunch of the film that we picked, which was very seminal in the lives of people who graduated high school at the turn of the century / millennia, and that was 1999's American Pie, selected by the best in the business, the ruggedly handsome, the intrepid Johnny. Johnny, tell everybody how you're feeling.
Completely buckled. but doing good, pal. You know, dead of winter, good. You know, it's still like, you know, dark outside at 4:30 and my bones are cold.
The sunlight coming off the snow is just accentuating all the gray. Like
all the gray.
God damn it.
Yeah. It's like when I take a picture and someone uses the flash, I'm like, oh, I'm so fucked in this picture. So I'm Steve Martin in this photo. But but no, I'm doing good, man. American Pie for sure. A very vivid memory of seeing this for the first time in the theater with just a completely erupting crowd from scene one at 17 years old, 16 years old, going on 17, right in our wheelhouse. Came out just the year before you and I first met, actually. But anyone, like you said, anyone of that age or around that age, when this movie came out, this movie had a major impact and people showed up for it because it made a ton of money for just an $11 million budget. And, you know, you just put this movie in a time capsule, you know, forget the sequels, which I like some of them I didn't. This movie is really just perfectly in this time capsule of 1999, which to us back then didn't have a sense of an identity. And now that we're so far distanced from it, it's like, wow, that is a very late 1990s movie right there. And then you get the cameos, Blink-182, when they were just exploding, others here and there who went on to other things, including the, you know, the main cast, you know, Sean William Scott. Nobody knew who the guy was. And then he rolls up and now he's still today just banking paychecks, doing films. So it is a movie that will always be near and dear to my heart. I will say probably... not aging as well for me, but I'm not going to sit here and say it's like, you know, Wayne's World or anything that, you know, as, or, Batman Returns, you know, how that may have felt, but I will say this, Mike, it is weird seeing this movie now at our age where I'm almost, because, you know, I'm a dad and I'm almost watching it from the perspective of a parent now. And it's an odd thing to see it from this lens, the way, while still seeing it in the permanent gaze of a 16-year-old horny young man.
Yeah, and you have to decide whether you're going to take the approach, you're going to talk to your son like a compassionate type of, you know, listener and confidant, or you're going to like regale him with your own tales of debauchery from the past, which is the original vision of the Jim's dad character. He was supposed to be like more of a skeevy type, and Eugene Levy like wasn't having it, and actually a lot of the dialogue was improvised and the character has completely changed. And I think that was one of the decisions in this movie that made, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things, like, I don't want to bash Eugene Levy because I know he got cast in this movie because the people involved recognized him from SCTV and they wanted to put him in something. But I don't think his career was, I think he was pretty much like that guy. He was like a that guy actor. Like it was like, oh, it's that guy with like the little white boy fro that show and the eyebrows that shows up in comedies, and he's like kind of funny. But I think this, I mean, if anybody of all the careers that this movie launched, I think it really benefited him the most.
I would say that's probably a fair bet. I mean, he definitely had little bit parts in a lot of movies for a long time. And I know he's always been, I'm not sure when it started, but I know he's always been sort of connected with Christopher Guest and those type of improvisationally encouraging movies, like those mockumentaries. But I'm not sure when they all sort of connected, because I know Eugene Levy has sort of been, has worked with Catherine O'Hara a lot over the years, so there's a connection there. I'm going to assume it's a Chicago-based connection. I could be making that up. Maybe it's Canadian. I don't know. But Either way, I do think Eugene Levy is a standout in this movie because of those choices. You know, having, yeah, and I don't know that I would have been able to see Eugene Levy playing this guy with some sort of sordid past of just complete and utter promiscuity and you know, slaying the land, so to speak. So I think he was in the right gear. You get the short sleeve business shirt with the tie and a little stuffy, but you're trying to be cool to connect with your kid. And I think that was one of the more endearing parts of the movie that has aged well, actually.
Yeah, I would go with that too, because when I was watching it, it was, I mean, I definitely didn't, I remember seeing this in the theater too, and I think I saw it with, I went to see movies with my cousin a lot, and like his friends that went to a neighboring school district, and I think when we saw this movie, like, we thought it was hilarious, because it was kind of like a slice of life, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was watching it this time, it just didn't, like, a lot of the jokes just didn't land the same way. Like, a lot of the sight gags just didn't land the same way. But like, I don't know, for some reason, one of the things that made me really laugh was just the Casey Affleck cameo. I don't know why. It was like, I just wasn't expecting to see him. I just hadn't seen him in a while, and then he pops up, and then the way he just said, orgasm, like, in the middle of a fucking, like, sushi place, and then he's, like, giving the dude sushi recommendations, like, is that his buddy? Is he, like, a manager?
Really,
like,
yeah.
What? And then they never explain it, because it has nothing to do with the movie, but it was just, like, that's where my brain went. I'm like, who's this random guy that he's giving menu recommendations to? Try the sushi hand roll. It's like, what? Do you work here?
And then Kevin's like, the egg roll? He's like, never mind that. Yeah, that was a good cameo too, for sure. Casey Affleck.
And that was post Good Will Hunting, right?
About a year after Good Will Hunting. Yeah. My boy's wicked smart.
But pre Manchester by the Sea.
A lot of things for Casey Affleck, but definitely post Chuck, I Had a Double Burger. But yeah, so I think we might be on the same page in terms of how we're assessing American Pie. I still had fun rewatching it, and it's not necessarily a movie it's been a long time since I had seen, so I didn't have to do too many, you know, I didn't have to focus all that much on this. I will say, you know, I don't know that a movie like this would be made exactly this way today. Like, obviously, the one standout being, like, illegally recording the girl in the room.
Yeah, we've got revenge porn.
That's just not fucking happening in a 2024 comedy. It would just never, that scene would not exist. They'd be like, are you kidding me with this? There's no way. So, it's in that time capsule. And back then, it was just, oh, this is fucking crazy.
It's just antics. Just boys being boys.
Yeah, just look at those tits. Yikes. It's just so raw and, like, you know, perfectly targeted to our demographic, because we were the same age as these characters at the time. You know, they're trying to wrap up high school. They're trying to get laid. And that's pretty much, if you were in high school during that time, that's what was going on. So it was very connectable. It was also R-rated comedy. They weren't flying off shelves back then either. You know, this is before The Hangover. This is before Old School. This is before Adam McKay.
Even Road Trip.
Before Todd Phillips. Yeah, but a year before Road Trip. This movie made Hollywood know that you can make teen comedies and make it a hard R and still have success, because this movie made, I think, just under $300 million on an $11 million budget and turned into a franchise. Some straight-to-video stuff, but three viable sequels that made money in their own right, and who knows if that continues thereafter. Because I actually found the fourth one not bad. It's like sort of showing them, you know, like we are now out in the workforce, maybe not totally in love with your job, and, you know, we are growing up as these characters are growing up. But this first one, now with the distance separated between us and our ages now with the characters there, there definitely are moments where I was like, man, I wish I was like these guys, or I feel like I'm like these guys. And now I'm like, God, these guys are fucking annoying.
Yeah, I mean, the way this movie came about, I'm always interested in that stuff. And it's not like, this isn't one of those movies that has like a long and storied production history, or like you mentioned, it was a modestly budgeted film. A lot of the actors did this for peanuts. Like, Sean William Scott, the actor who plays Stifler, for those who aren't familiar with that name, he was working at Home Depot before he took this part. And I think he made like $8,000 to be in it, and then it you know, launched his career. But the writer, Adam Hertz, wrote this based on his experience in Grand Rapids, of all places, which is a city I've become pretty well accustomed to over the past 5 or 6 years. And that's apropos of nothing. But he kind of wrote it with the idea in mind that he was inspired by movies like Porky's and Bachelor Party, like these raucous, like these sex-crazed romps. But he also kind of interjected his own experience, and maybe in a little like opportunistic, and I don't mean this in a negative connotation, but kind of mercenary way. It was like, they, you know, they were doing all these, there was kind of a resurgence of these teen movies. Like I can't remember all of them off the top of my head, but like I think She's All That came out like the year before this.
About 98. Or, yep.
Yeah. And then like there was this kind of resurgence of teen movies. And this is kind of like it was kind of cashing in on that, but it's like a more blue version. And, mm-hmm. and it just kind of caught in a way that even the studio didn't expect, because they sold off some of the distribution rights because they weren't 100% sure they were going to recoup their investment.
I remember all of the, just me experiencing when I first heard about the movie or saw a clip or whatever, and it was all rooted around this scene of this kid having sex with a pie. it really was. And I know it's the title, American Pie, and the cover, they had the pie with a little like thing scooped out. But I remember there being just such a hysteria about like, oh man, they have seen this movie where he has sex with a fucking pie, and they're like he gets caught and all this stuff. And there's like multiple takes. There's an unrated version where he's standing up and the pie's covering him. Then there's a version where he's literally on the counter humping it.
Yeah, that's the one I have for some reason. And then
yeah,
there was, you know, there the original version of this movie was NC-17, and they had to make a lot of cuts to it. And there was some kid who got his hands on a work print a couple months before it came out, and he ended up being involved in the movie somehow, and they gave him a cameo in one of the later ones.
So really?
Yeah. Kind of one of those wow. One of those weird things. Can you imagine that? Like somebody steals a movie and then they're like, hey, we want you to be involved to kind of shut you up. And
it's like those guys who like Catch Me If You Can. They like they evade the FBI so much, they're like, get him a job.
But like there was a weird thing in the late 90s, though, where there was these strange incidents would happen that would kind of create buzz around the movie, because the like people were talking, like he showed it to a bunch of people and they didn't give it away, but people were talking about it in the early days of the internet, and that mm-hmm. kind of created buzz. It's kind of like, not like the Blair Witch, which was like kind of, well, I think that was a very orchestrated thing, but
yes, yeah, 100%.
This could have been too. I don't know. I don't want to sound like a, you know, complete rube just buying every story that's put in front of me.
You rube.
you fucking yeah. hayseed, Mike.
I will say though, this movie did launch a lot of people. Like you said, Sean William Scott, and I saw an interview with him talking about how he got the role because he had kept, he has a very nice disposition and he's like a nice guy in reality. So, and he was having a hard time because he was going after all these nice guy roles and just not getting anything. No bites, nothing. And then one of his friends who acts like Steve Stifler or someone he used to work with or whatever it was like, you should try it like this and go for this character. And he did it. And something clicked and he got the gig. And from there, his career took off. But it's not just him. You know, Jason Biggs, no one knew who he was. That was probably his first major role. Same with Tara Reid, who's somehow still alive. Natasha Lyonne, who's now carved out her own niche doing TV shows, most recently Russian Doll. Obviously, Shannon Elizabeth, who everyone, you know, I'm not going to get too into the weeds on it, but she was a starlet back then. And then, of course, Mina Suvari, who probably maybe had bigger fame with American Beauty, which also came out that year.
When I was watching this, I kept thinking her character's name was Angela. And then I was like, wait a minute. Was that her name in American Beauty? And it was. Like,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, she comes out her first two movies, for lack of argument, both being titled with American in it. So
she's done like eight of them. that have American something in the title. I mean, some of like four of them are these movies.
Yeah, but, and then there's the movie Loser, which he did with.
With Jason Biggs and Greg Kinnear as like the skeevy college professor that's banging her.
Yeah, and then Rookie of the Year. You know, he Thomas Ian Nicholas disappears after Rookie of the Year, and he comes back 6 years later, which felt a lot longer to me, but it was only 6 years, and he's oddly like a co-lead in this movie. But the way the Jim character took off, he just like leapfrogged him, because if you like really think about the movie and its plot, it's centered around this pact that Kevin comes up with for his friends. Like, I think Jim was originally supposed to be more of like a Kramer, like a co-lead, but like now that like once this movie came out, Jim became the focal point, and they almost like pushed Kevin aside for the other movies, probably because of the pie scene, probably because of the Eugene Levy stuff too. But in this movie, it's, you know, Kevin more of like the straight character, you know, not too over the top and wild. And then you have him surrounded by all these clowns.
Well, and he's also, they made him like he was the leader of the group, but then the whole thing kind of gets away from him. Like, everybody kind of takes their own direction, and then they're kind of sick of all of his nonsense. And then if you think about it,
all of his rules.
Yeah. Well, not just that, but then by the end of the movie, he's pretty unlikable. And then he kind of gets humbled when he finally bangs his girlfriend, and then she's like, it's not going to work. And then, but it's like he did this whole thing where it was like, guys, let's race to home plate. And he was on third base already. Like, he already had a girlfriend. And like, they were like, it's kind of a little shitty, I think. But, and then they're like, he was fucking bitching about getting blown. It's like, oh no, the fucking tragedy of it all.
He's like, not again. You're like, oh, you idiot. But how insufferable is the Oz character in this movie?
Yeah, it's like everything he does with the show choir is cringy, and but his character actually has like kind of one of the, I think he has one of the better arcs, because
I still hate it though.
Yeah, you're not into it, huh?
His sensitive guy voice makes me want to throw up.
Oh man,
it came from the heart.
Yeah, because like in the beginning, he's faking it, and then he kind of actually becomes like a more sensitive guy.
Right. And that's what happens to all the characters when they all go through these failures in a very superficial attempt to get laid. So like Jim tries with Nadia, blows up in his face and the whole pie thing, and he gets completely embarrassed. Oz with the college chick, he's like, suck me beautiful, and she like just completely shuts him down, and he's like, okay, that's not working. And then you have Kevin, of course, who can't bring himself to tell his girlfriend he loves her, and she catches him saying something about, I'm really just tired of getting my dick sucked. And so he has that. And then you have Finch, who does this whole lie, and that blows up in his face. So they all go through this moment where their initial just superficial attempts just crumble. And then things end up working out for all of them in this weird twist of fate, which does add charm to the movie. I do think the characters are ultimately likable, and I believe the friendships. I can see these as a real group of guys who are friends, so that all that still works. I think just some of it that didn't age as well for me was some of the level of humor and that sort of thing, just simply because we're 40 now.
So. Yeah. Did the Oz thing bother you because of like when you're dealing with people you hang out with in real life and you got to deal with their boyfriend voices? Like, was it some of that where that shit used to throw me, and you can't, it's like really hard to say something because people are just going to think you're a hater, but it's like really hard to listen to one of your buddies talk to his girl, and he's like, okay, baby, I love you so much. And you just want to fucking kill him, then yourself. Because everyone would be better off. Like, the whole, like, your voice goes up. It like, you drop your volume, but your voice goes up, like, a fucking octave and a half. And then you're, like, talking all fucking sing-songy. It's like...
it's like fucking, like, Ed Helms in The Hangover. When he's, like, afraid of his girlfriend. And he's like, okay, bye.
No, it's way worse than that. Like, that's bad, but...
Maybe. I'm just trying to think. I'm obviously not going to call anybody out, but... I mean, we all know that, you know, we've had friends that do that. I don't think I could ever say I brought myself to that, because that's just not my constitution.
Or maybe, like, you just wouldn't know. Because, like...
Yeah. Have I?
Not that I've heard, but I mean, you know,
I would hope you'd call me out, though.
No, man. Not that I remember.
Like, you call that shit out. That's all I need to know. That's real friendship.
No, I'm just saying that it's one of those things, like, if people were doing it, you probably, it's hard to do some, like, truly objective self-analysis. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you think you're talking to your girlfriend, you think you sound like you, but you're really talking like, I don't know. Maybe we can go to Olive Garden. I don't know.
Olive Garden. Kathleen,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, pottery'd be really fun. Yeah.
I do. Yeah, I do know people who I might not necessarily be good friends with who do that, and it is weird. Yeah, like grown men.
It's very common. It's extremely common.
Yeah. Like how come the girls don't like do it the opposite way? And like, hey baby, let's go watch some football. Taylor Swift calls up Travis. I'm going to the game.
Yeah, let's pound some beers and fuck each other. Yeah.
Let's do some Adderall. Yeah. It's me. Hi. That's all you need to know. So I didn't like Oz. I thought he was just so obnoxious.
That exchange still makes me laugh, though, where Stifler says, yeah, don't expect them to pay for the limo. And he goes, just go, Stifler, fuck. And then he goes, I mean, why do you have to be so insensitive all the time? Right.
He's like, what?
So, yeah, so the Oz character kind of ground on you.
Yeah, I did not like that.
What about
that.
The Finch character? He was like one of the few people who was actually young enough to be in high school when he was cast in this. And yeah. I think it was like his first big thing. I think it was first anything, really, Eddie K. Thomas.
I thought Finch was fine. I can go with or without Finch in this movie. I remember Stifler, really thinking Stifler was funny back in the day. Still kind of funny, but not as much. I like Jim fine, but I think a lot of it was just more of the movie itself that is enjoyable than any one particular performance or character. I think it's pretty good ensemble. Yeah. They all carried it pretty well collectively. The one thing that kind of mind fucked me was that Jennifer Coolidge is younger than us when this movie came out.
Yeah, she was only 14 years older than Sean William Scott. She's supposed to be playing his mom.
And yeah, she's like the one thing about this, 39.
Yeah, the one, the Stifler performance that I, like, a little factoid I picked up was supposedly that when he got this, or when he, I don't know if he was when he got the part, or it had to be when he was auditioning for it, but he said that he called up 8 guys that he hated in high school, and he talked to them for a little while, and he would take little things from them for the Stifler character, like he took one guy's smile, he took one guy's walk, to make, like, this kind of, like meta composite of the high school asshole, and that became the Stifler character. And they explore that in the later movies, like how he's pretty unlikable and it's hard for people to be around him, but they still kind of do for whatever reason. Like, it's in this movie, it's not as deep as that. It's like everybody is using Stifler because he throws parties and he has a lake house.
Yeah, and his mom couldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, they do evolve more with that character as the other movies go on. But just thinking about, you know, it's hard to watch this movie and look at these actors and not think about, you know, their careers since. Because I always try to, like, when we revisit a movie like this, where it's like a lot of people's, you know, quote unquote, first movie or at least their first big break, we weren't seeing, you know, these actors by their names as we do now. We were just seeing the character. We're like, oh, whoever that is, that's Jim. I don't know who that Jim is. That's that guy.
The only one I recognized was Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
Natasha Lyonne was in this movie a year or two before that called, like, The Slums of Beverly Hills or something.
The Slums of Beverly Hills,
and it was
yes.
like it was like one of those awkward coming-of-age. Yeah. And she's like, I just remember they showed the scene in the trailer a lot where she's wearing, like, one of those big old-timey brassieres.
Yes, that's right. I do remember that. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and even like you said, Eugene Levy didn't really, wasn't too familiar with him. And you know, there are people who had really small parts that went on to have decent careers. John Cho being one of them. I think he was like 48 when he filmed this,
he's 26.
This part.
but he looked 18, so it was fine.
He looked 18. Also,
he was so nice they put him in the movie twice.
Yes, yeah. And he came back for all the sequels. But I tried to look this up, and I guess there's no definitive answer, but this was definitely the first time I ever heard the term MILF before.
Yeah, it didn't invent the writer didn't invent the term MILF, but this movie certainly popularized it. I mean, that's a huge part of its legacy, is that the whole MILF, just that whole acronym being appropriated any way you like, and it being applied to any adult film performer over the age of 22. But like they said, the thing I saw was that it was being thrown around on the internet for years, like mm-hmm. internet message boards and things like that. But that was like before they were really widely used by people. Like if MILF was on Reddit and then they put it in a movie like 4 years later, people would think it was really lame.
Yeah,
but
right.
That wasn't how things were during this time.
Yeah, social media was AOL, and then internet message boards, and it wasn't this certain level of social connectivity that we have today, where it would be like a trending topic or something like that. But either way, I mean, that's a cultural landmark in itself, because that's just a term now that has existed since. Mom, I'd like to fuck MILF, and there they are just chanting MILF at Jennifer Coolidge. I remember being in the theater watching this movie. I don't remember exactly who I was with, obviously, a bunch of my friends. And I remember the crowd just erupting in that first scene where he gets caught by his parents watching scrambled porn, because I probably did the same thing the night before, not getting caught, but first it's you watch Howard Stern on the E channel from 11 to 12 or whatever. And then you try to get the channel 99 going or whatever it is. And it's, scrambled. Like, people don't understand. People, like, younger than us. Maybe 30 and younger. Maybe even a little older than that. They don't understand. It was not easy to get porn. You had to earn your porn back then.
Yeah, or, you had to have an older brother who just had a bunch of it laying around.
Which I didn't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was a... I don't think your sister was going to help you out on that one.
Cool. Oh, let's cool it. Cool it.
I said didn't think she was.
No, I know. Just playing up the bit.
Or maybe she would have. Who knows?
All right. Jesus Christ. I'm so glad. I'm sure she doesn't listen to this, but if you do, my apologies, Autumn. Sitting in the theater, the crowd just erupting at that first scene. And then that's when I sort of knew, like, man, this is going to be a really fun movie. And the only other movie I remember, like, the crowd being that explosive in the theater for a comedy was, I think, maybe Liar Liar. I don't know. But it was, like, people, like, there was, like, people make the stereotype of, like, popcorn flying through the air and stuff. Like, it was raucous. Like, people were really into the movie. And it just goes to show, because, again, it went on such a long run, and I don't think anybody really expected it to do anything. It's one of those movies that, pre-social media, it caught word of mouth and people being like, yeah, you hear about this kid in this movie with the pie and all this shit. And it just became this cultural little phenomenon and turned itself into a franchise. But I think right out of the gate with Jim and the sock and the scrambled porn, like, any kid who was a teenager then watching that was like seeing themselves on screen, so to speak. And it was a very relatable movie for kids our age. And I think as I look back on it now and watch it, I'm always going to have a part of me that sees it that way and takes me back and makes me feel like I did back then, which I love and I appreciate. But then also I'm watching it now from the eyes of like a dad and, a guy who's like 40. And I'm like, oh, these fucking idiots try to get away with this. Or, it's like so weird how I'm seeing it from two lanes now.
Yeah, like, my experience with it was that I was watching it, and I kind of remembered what it was like to watch it the first time in the theater, and then later on, like the first couple years after it was out on video, but then I hadn't seen it for a really long time, and I think I've seen all the sequels, but I couldn't tell you like five things about any of them, except the one where Stifler walks into the gay bar and he's like, oh my god, what the fuck is going on?
Like that American Wedding, yeah.
Yeah, that was from American Wedding. And then in American Pie 2, where they introduced the rule of threes, which has kind of taken on a new resurgence in internet discourse about how men and women lie about their notch count, their tally, whatever, body count, whatever. That's the popular term, which just fucking irks me for some reason.
Yeah,
because people think it's so clever and it's become so ubiquitous, and it's like, it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
But I digress. Yeah. This movie, like, I don't think I got to this point. I think we kind of switched gears a little bit. But when the guy was writing it, Adam Hertz, he wrote it. It was titled like something like Untitled Sex Comedy That Your Readers Will Probably Hate, But We Could Make for $10 million. So he knew exactly what he was doing, like what he was trying to go for. But he also said, and I think why this movie kind of was received a little differently as opposed to some of the movies that inspired it, was that he made he gave the women more control. They weren't just, I mean, yeah, they were objects of desire, but it was like, it's like in real life, like, you know, you can't really have sex with a woman unless she says yes. I mean, well, they're, you know, there's a small population that do, but they're, most of them are in jail, thankfully.
Yeah.
But, you know, the women are the gatekeepers of sex. So they kind of gave them, they rounded out their personalities more and kind of like made it so that the guys had to kind of get on their game, their program,
to even try
to get what they wanted.
I agree with that, because it wound up being that Michelle knew Jim was like this weirdo, pre-ejaculating pervy dude, and because she wanted to get laid. And then you have, you know, Jessica, who's sort of mentoring Victoria or Vicky about, you know, how to handle, you know, Kevin and all that stuff. But I also liked, you know, like we're just saying about like Michelle, like she just wanted to get laid too. And I liked like this movie, like, allowed the women to not just be these like, oh, I won't have sex with you, that's so disgusting, to like, no, they're kind of, they're horny too.
I'm not a piece of meat, I need to be romanced.
Right. And then, yeah, you have all these girls who are like fawning over Finch because of these tall tales, and they're like, does he have a date for the prom? Because I heard he's huge. And it's like, I don't remember seeing a ton of movies that have girls openly expressing their horniness, and I thought that was a fresh take too, because I went to high school and college, and girls were just as horny as we were. So it was good to see that it wasn't just this one-sided thing where it was like the one, you know, the guys were just out to nut, and the girls were like, never, never, ever, you know? So so I like that that was, I think it was way more realistic. And, you know, you look back on this movie and some people will say like, wow, they really crossed the line a lot. It's like, no, that's how shit was, yeah, man.
And like Stifler is a total tool, but he's like in shape and he plays a sport. So he actually has no problem getting women, which like really squares with real life. Like,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. The douchebags of that ilk didn't have issues in high school. That's for sure. One cameo that I didn't connect was in another very popular R-rated comedy, was the girl who plays Courtney. She's one of the girls who asked like Kevin about Finch, and like, oh, did you see him in the shower or something? I don't know what it was. But she plays the wife, the bride in The Hangover.
Right. Yeah.
I did not connect that. I'm like, holy
shit.
Oh,
I didn't either. I mean, I saw it. I read it later. I think she tried to be a professional poker player for a while, too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so, I've seen her play in a couple poker tournaments on TV, but they were like from 2015 or something.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, when I think about this movie, there's big scenes. There's obviously the pie scene, but then there's also the webcam scene, which I think also got word of mouth. And, you know, say what you want about the superficial desires of young men at the time. Like I said, getting access to porn and things of that nature was not easy at all. We're talking dial-up internet for most of us still at that time. Mom, don't pick up the phone. I'm trying to download fake pictures of naked celebrities. That type of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, this movie really captures lightning in a bottle when you consider that there were people paying full admission to watch Spice World. So,
and I'm one of them, baby. Yes. But people were paying full admission to see naked Shannon Elizabeth in this movie, which is another scene that got a big buzz and big word of mouth. And there you have that. So you add that to the mix, to the embarrassing moments of Jim. And all of a sudden people are like, I got to go see this movie. Because I know damn well there were teenagers who went to go see Titanic just cause, so they could see Kate Winslet naked. It was like, we are very jaded in this day and age where you have a phone in your hand that is a porn vehicle. You can watch porn anywhere, anytime, at any place. In 1998-99, wasn't the case. So that was definitely a driving factor for the horny teenage guy of this era.
What percentage of the internet do you think is pornography?
It depends. Are we counting just porn?
What do you mean?
Well, I'm saying, like, you know, people can see porn and, you know, there's a lot of weirdos out there. So for a lot of people, it's not just porn. You know, sometimes it's a tailpipe on a Mustang. Sometimes sometimes it's a naked cow. Sometimes, you know, you don't know. Sometimes it's a donkey. Sometimes it's a donkey show.
All right, well, let's keep it between two humans. Like,
oh, okay.
Yeah, let's keep it there.
Like 45%.
45%.
Yeah. 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 What was the Dr. Cox line? If they got rid of the porn, that it'll be one site left and it'd be called Bring Back the Porn.
I forgot about that. I need to do a Scrubs rewatch, but I just don't know if some of the stuff will hold up like it used to, especially in the later seasons.
Yeah, maybe. Scrubs is good, though.
The problem I have with comedies, and this happens in most of them, and a lot of it's because it's a lot of the same people, like Bill Lawrence and Michael Shore and those guys, is that they go a certain amount of time, and it's like the people can read each other's minds. And it's like, people don't get to know each other that well. Like, it's just... Mm-hmm. You're all acting like people who have been written. You're not acting like real people, unlike the people in this movie, who...
Ooh.
I mean, they're not really... I liked your point about how they do seem like they have some kind of camaraderie and some kind of rapport, even though with a cast like this, one of the things that stood out to me, and this isn't really so much a criticism as an observation, is just that, you know, some of the people are just not in the movie very much. Like, I remember... I thought Tara Reid was in this movie a lot more than she actually was. And then I read that she was only on set for like 7 days or something.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, like Natasha Lyonne was only on set for 5 days.
Which is smart in the sense, because I think what makes this movie work the most is the friendship between the main four guys. And you could throw Stifler in there too, but it's really those four. It's Jim, Finch, Kevin, and Oz. And if you don't spend enough time with them together, then the whole pact element doesn't make sense. It feels almost like PCU, where you're like, you know, this plot really just got lost on itself. And I think it was important for them to really focus as much as they could on the friendship of these guys, because that is the endearing part of the movie. It's not even so much them trying to help each other get laid. It's them going through this sort of... you know, the next step, this maturation, this next step in their lives without realizing it. This whole time they're so focused and hell-bent on coming. Meanwhile, they're like becoming men, and they're realizing, like, you know, without realizing it, in this conquest of trying to get laid, they're growing up, which I find very interesting. So while, you know, maybe the movie didn't age great in some of the bits and maybe some of the humor, and maybe that's just because it's 25 years old.
Yeah, some of it's just aging out of it. Like, I'm sure when I was seven... Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's plenty of jokes. Like, God forbid you say anything bad about a movie like Animal House or Caddyshack, but it's like, you watch some of those movies, you're like, some of this shit is fucking old, man. Some of this shit is just, like, tired, this humor. And it doesn't mean it's not a classic comedy. You watch it understanding when it was made and appreciate that element of it, but it's not always going to play 25 years later. Just like anything in life, things have their time and their place. There's a reason why, you know, it's a little embarrassing to see a live video clip or an audio clip of Axl Rose trying to sing Guns N' Roses songs. He had his time, and his time had passed. Sometimes maybe a rock star needs to die young in order to preserve that legacy. Instead of hearing a falsetto Mickey Mouse trying to tell me he's on the night train, ready to crash and burn, he will never learn. Apparently, he will never learn to stop doing live shows for the money. But anyway, you see what I'm saying, Mike? You know, like Caddyshack, a great movie. And some of the stuff is like, I don't know. And I feel like that's where we're at with this movie. This was like our generation's, you know, Animal House, or like you said, Porky's, or something like that. I don't know. What's your take on that? Do you think that's accurate, or do you think it's just this movie in itself in a vacuum? Maybe just the humor just didn't age as well.
I think a lot of it, to be fair, is just I just don't think it's as funny as seeing a dude like with his dick in a tube sock. I'm sure when I was 17, I thought that shit was fucking hilarious, but like it just didn't hit the same way a quarter of a century later.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it could just be, you know, our age, you know, maybe you introduce this movie to a 17-year-old kid and he laughs his ass off. And it's all of a sudden like it gets this like new, you know, audience for it. I don't know. I really don't know. I'll slip a DVD copy at my sister's house for my nephew who's going to turn 15 this year, and then have him watch it and he could let us know what he thinks. But
yeah, let me know how that family drama unfolds. I'm sure that'll be really interesting.
No, because I'll give it to him as a gift for his birthday, a surprise gift, and then I'll say, "Love, Uncle Matt."
Oh, nice.
Yeah, let him fucking deal with it. So you brought up the Eugene Levy thing, and I want to go back to that because I didn't know that was more of this pivot. So obviously a good choice. And I think, like I said at the top, I think this movie holds water because of the Jim and his dad thing. Because I don't think, like, if all these kids were doing all these things, like the only other parent that we really experience in this movie is Stifler's mom. Yeah, we see Vicky's dad going upstairs to get her for dinner, and there's that bit joke about her saying, "I'm coming." I get it. It's funny. And that was funny in the theater. I remember that being very funny. But the only parent-to-kid relationship we really gather in this is Jim and his dad. And I think that that is necessary, because I think about movies that came out this time, like horror movies, like Scream. It's like, where were all the fucking parents? They all went out of town that week, and all the kids had these parties and got laid and all this stuff. I'm like, that's not reality. We had to sneak out of our houses. We had to convince our parents to let us do things. And at least in this movie, you have both parents. The mom was more of a, you know, conservative, and the dad's like, all right, let me try to connect with my son, even though I'm out of touch. And I found that to be a really endearing thing. Like, here's his dad. He sees his son. He probably sees himself in his eyes, and he's like, let me try to connect with him, even though I don't really know exactly what I'm talking about either. I found that to be, you know, even though they're looking at fucking porno magazines and stuff, I did find the connection between the dad and son to be a nice, not dramatic, but like a reprieve from the boners and dick jokes and slapstick nature of the movie. It actually like gave it some earth and some,
yeah, you grounded, it kind of balances out. You have the kind of like heartfelt stuff to kind of, you know, balance out the puerile and sophomoric antics. But this isn't, you know, some half-ass vocabulary building podcast. You know, we're supposed to be talking about American Pie. but yeah, like I think it does give that movie kind of its moral center a little bit.
Yeah.
And it also, when you look at it like that, like think about how different this movie would have been if they tried to mine more humor out of like his dad, like telling a story about, yeah, like getting a dry tugger like behind a dumpster of an ice cream shop, and like they try to make that happen, but it's like and then there's like no downtime between all the bits.
I agree. And when the minute you say and you describe it that way, I think of Gary Cole's character in Ricky Bobby. His dad is just like this like alcoholic, just scumbag. Just like, that's what I picture Jim's dad may have been if they stuck to the original formula. And I don't think that works. I think they needed this sort of sweet, sincere connection between the father and son, not only just for the movie itself, but also, you know, for Jim's sake as a character. Because if he doesn't have that, he doesn't have a lot of redeeming aspects in this movie. Like, what is he invites that girl to go to prom only because she's the only one, which we turns out wasn't the case, the only one who didn't know that he fucking came in his pants twice while illegally filming a girl. Like, you needed you needed to make Jim likable or the movie's a complete bust.
Yeah.
So they had to have that, like, him be this uncomfortable sort of butt of the joke and then also have that connection with his dad. I think that was important in at least selling the movie. I'm not saying they were trying to make it, you know, an R-rated John Hughes movie or anything like that, but they needed something or else it's just this, like, very surface level shitty comedy. Like, and there's plenty of movies like that. So I think they pushed some of the right buttons at the right time.
Yeah, I agree with you. When I was just watching it this time, it was just a lot harder to relate to, and the laughs just weren't there. But I think a lot of it was because I knew what the setups were. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, like that that whole I'm coming gag. It's like, I saw that, it was like, oh, yeah, and then he's going to come up to the door. Yeah, like, but.
That's why I wonder if, you know, teenagers watch that movie today for the first time, will they laugh? Will they find it funny? And are we, you know, wrongfully viewing this as just knowing all the bits and from a tired perspective of, oh yeah, I remember that bit in American Pie, which, I mean, that may be part of it. You know, maybe why, like, maybe Wayne's World isn't hitting as much for us. I don't know.
I should ask, I have a nephew. He's turning 18 this summer. I should ask him if he's seen this movie and what he thinks of it. Cause I have a couple different thoughts. One is that maybe it does hit that same wavelength with another generation of teenage boys, especially, but it could be entirely possible that either they or these kids are so debauched now because they're like watching RedTube when they're like 11 and they just think this is kind of lame. Or you could picture it going the other way where it's like, I think when they were filming the girl, it's like, that was problematic. It's like, it was a different time.
I agree.
So
I agree.
It's a complete, actually, you know, it's a great question, and I think it's a complete fucking crapshoot. Maybe we should ask people. Maybe we should put it to the masses, see what they think. Like, what do you think the average 16 to 17 year old, like high school junior or senior, who hadn't seen American Pie, couple generations removed from the core audience, like, what do you think they would think of it? At Just the Movies on Twitter. God damn it.
Do it. do it. But then
worst plug ever.
Yeah, but it's a good point. I do want to find out. So I think it's a fair thing to toss out there. I don't know, like, what we're going to get in terms of results. I don't know how many of our listeners have teenage sons or what have you, or even teenage daughters, you know? But because girls found this movie very funny, too.
Oh, I'm sure that's what fucking dads want. Like, their daughters talking about, like, how, like, what they think of this movie, like, how it appeals to their horniness. I'm sure that's exactly what they want to hear.
No, that's not what I was inferring. But
no, I mean, it's just like that double standard, you know? You know, it's kind of like the whole thing about, can you imagine, like, if Jim's dad was, like, talking about sex, and it's like, look, I know that's how I got here, but, like, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to hear about my dad bonking. Like,
right. No, do not. Yeah. I never had the talk with my dad. I think he realized it wasn't necessary. I figured it out on my own and I did all right. So, but another scene that was real, like, there are very big pockets of just, like, raunchiness in this, and we haven't talked about it yet, but it was when Stifler drinks Kevin's jizz.
Ugh, that was rough, man.
How's the pale ale?
The original line was, how's the man chowder? It's like, that's not even clever. Like, that's just rank. Like, at least pale ale is like a beer pun.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But here's a question, and I don't know how do I say this without coming across like gross? It's tough to navigate this movie a little bit.
Just let it rip, man.
So when Vicky's blowing him, was her whole thing like she wasn't gonna swallow it? Was that why? Is that
the way that all played out, she was nowhere near it when the payload was dropped.
Yeah. But then he's like, oh, I got a nut, so I'm just gonna do it in this beer. Like, I don't know. That's just a very odd. I know it's to set up the bit, but, like, I don't know if I'd be like, all right, yeah, I'm just gonna come in this beer now. Like, I don't know.
Maybe he thought that was the polite option. Maybe that's what Emily Post taught him. Like, if you're gonna, you're at a stranger's house and you got a cum somewhere, like, blow it in a cup. Like, don't do it on a bedspread. Like, somebody's got to clean that up.
Right.
That bedspread could be ruined. You don't know how much that thing cost.
Right.
Or, like, yeah, you know, just blow it on, like, an antique, like, oak headboard and just, like, completely ruin the finish. And then they have to fucking go, like, re-lacquer it.
Yeah. Apparently anywhere except on the other person is what we're going for here.
Well, also, you got to take into consideration the limitations of the format. Like, we're not watching an actual porn. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. 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 So that was obviously a disgusting scene, and they've carried that bit out.
I'm really glad they toned that down. When I heard the original scene, like, how's the man chowder? It's like, man, they're just like making Kevin even more unlikable. Like.
And then, yeah, Stifler off camera throws up on the girl. She runs out of the house. But how do you even come back from that as a human?
You got to move on at some point, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, Stifler had a really bad week. A kid he hates fucks his mother.
that's how it all wraps up.
And he swallows another guy's load.
Yeah.
That's a rough week. And then, like... And then who's cleaning up that house?
To put it mildly, that's a bad week.
He had a really bad week.
Well, it was like, it was a bad 3 weeks.
His best friend quits the lacrosse team. Like,
during the final game of the year.
The real plot of the movie is the destruction of the American dream of the peaked in high school American jock. That's what this is. That's the subplot of this movie, is the death of the peaked in high school American jock, a.k.a. Steve Stifler. Because then in the subsequent movies, he's like fallen behind all them because he's still the same old guy. And that's like another part of the seriousness of the franchise. I actually really enjoy like seeing the evolution of the character in the other sequels, because, you know, everyone sort of knows people like that, where it's like hanging on to that, you know, the glory days of high school and stuff. And when I think back to high school, I'm like, I wouldn't want to go back to high school. So, but there are people who are, you know, you see people, towny people at a bar, and they want to talk about, you know, how fast they ran track or something.
It's, yeah, it's funny. A few weeks ago, like, I don't really seek these things out, but I don't like run away from them. Like, a friend of ours was in town and he wanted to hang out, and I was like, yeah. And so I met up with him, and he neglected to tell me that there was gonna be like 10 other people we went to high school with there, which is fine. Like, you know, I was just kind of surprised by the whole thing. I thought it was just gonna be me and him hanging out. And it's interesting talking to people 20 years removed from high school, 22 years removed from high school, whatever the case might be. And it's just interesting, like, you think people have life a certain way, and it turns out that that's not how they saw it. That's not how, but one of the dudes that was there, like, he was always really popular. And then, but he said that when he first got to school that it was really hard for him to make friends. Then he had this kind of high profile thing happen to him, and all of a sudden it was like people wanted to get his attention. And then he became a popular kid. But, like, before that, it wasn't like that for him. And that left kind of an impression on him. And I was like, yeah, it's hard to get a objective, like, unvarnished opinion about what you were like in high school.
That's, you know, that's a good point. That, you know, there are, you know, everyone has their own perspective on their time, and people have their own judgments of other people. And they play that a bit in this movie, you know, with the embarrassment of Jim and all that came with that, and Finch, you know, that's another really funny scene, actually, because I'll always find toilet humor funny, was the laxatives. And
again, that's poisoning somebody. So we got revenge porn. We have poisoning. What else do we have?
Potential statutory rape. I don't know how old Finch is in the movie. Sexual abuse, maybe. Michelle abusing Jim. Say my name, bitch. But the Finch scene, like, you know, him having this, you know, creating this facade and this folklore about him and it working, and then it just completely blowing up when Stifler just had enough, and they take a page out of Dumb and Dumber, and he does the revenge with the laxative, and he just blows up the bathroom and comes out, and everyone laughs at him. And it's like, watching that now, I'm like, all right, that was a really funny scene and stuff. But I, because I'm so removed from high school, I forget about, you know, some of the anxiety and stuff. Like, you know, I moved to a new town in the middle of sixth grade, and that's a really tough time to move when you're 11, 12 years old. And, you know, dealing with all the insecurities of trying to fit in or not get bullied or getting made fun of, you know, am I not wearing the cool sneakers and all that shit was probably more prevalent in my mind watching this movie back then. And now, you know, I've come into my own. I'm an adult. I have my own life. And like that stuff feels like it was in a different lifetime. I think that probably lends to why I don't connect as much with the movie, in addition to the obvious stuff, you know, forgetting what it's like being a high school kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with a lot of that. I don't really have too much more to add to it, but it was,
yeah. Did you have a favorite moment in this movie, at least, or did you have any particular scene in the rewatch that you still got a solid kick out of?
I mean, some of the little exchanges with Stifler, like I kind of forgot. Yeah, the character's a little over the top, but then like when you know that's his shtick going in, like, and then, like, just the way he interacts with people, he's like Sherman, what the fuck are you doing here?
right.
Or when he's talking about hitting the high C but like the only problem I have with that joke is that's too clever for Stifler. Talking about hitting the high C on a choir girl.
Oh, yeah.
What about you, man? Like, what was...
I don't know if I have a standout scene that just, like, cracked me up this time.
Yeah, it's kind of the same for me, honestly.
I could lie and pick one out.
No, man, that's...
But, yeah.
That's what people come here for. To get lied to. Their bosses lie to them. Their wives lie to them. Their parents, if they're still with us. Everybody lies to you, but not Mike and Johnny.
We don't fucking.
I don't know where this sanctimony came from.
I don't know. I like it though. I believe in it. It's honest. It's real. Another thing that was pretty cool is like a lot of elements of this movie that make me think about, the perspective of or hype of things back then. Cause I remember, you know, this band Oleander coming out in like 98 or whatever. And it was like them, Local H, a few years after that, like Seether, everyone was looking for like the next Nirvana. And like, people were like, we know it's not Foo Fighters. That's a completely different thing. Even though the guy from Foo Fighters is in it, but like, this is going to be like the next Nirvana. I remember like Oleander came out. People were like, this is gonna be like the next fucking big rock band. And the Stifler party opens where he's playing the song by Oleander. And I guarantee you zero of our listeners were like, I have no idea who Oleander is. But I when I'm rewatching it and he opens the door and the band kids are there saying we're here for the party. And he's like, oh, I think you mean down the street. Meanwhile, this loud fucking music playing. People are like screaming, drinking, throwing beers. And he's like, yeah, try down the street. And it's this song by this band, Oleander. And I remember people being like, these guys are going to be huge. And then on the flip side of it, you have the song Mutt by Blink-182, who had already established themselves with Damn It off of Dude Ranch. Enema of the State just came out, probably to this day, their biggest album ever. They wound up being in the movie. They had just gotten Travis Barker as their drummer. And then they just take off and have this monster career. So it's just funny, like, again, like the time capsule when you think about every aspect of this movie, whether it's the music, you know, the cameos, the launching of those of the actors, the humor and the clothing, which we haven't even talked about the absurdities of the clothing back then for kids who were not even like skater kids or anything, like what preppy kids were supposed to look like back then. I'll get to that in a minute, but it really does fit into this frozen in time thing, and that I still think is very cool.
Yeah, the only thing that was missing to make this soundtrack more 90s was some ska. Other than that, I mean, they had the pop punk covered, they had like the kind of alternative grunge angle, they even had like the soft sensitive like girl singing stuff, and then they had a whole song on there too, so it was all there.
Yeah, did they have that song Laid yet? Like, it became, like, the franchise's song.
That was in the second one, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, every time I hear that song on the radio, I think about the American Pie movies, and I can't remember why. And, yeah, it was they put it – I think it was in the trailer for the second one. And then
I think you're right.
And then I think you're right. It became kind of like a franchise theme.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I I didn't remember hearing it in this one, and I you know, if it was in the credits or whatever, it might have been, but yeah, so that became like the franchise theme. You're right. So it wasn't in this one. But still,
no,
you know,
said it, not me.
I know, but
you're right.
But all right, I'll be right. But I just think, you know, the movie, you know, it had its time, it had its place, but the outfits, like, I remember wearing, like, what was I fucking thinking? Just like, I was trying to get girls to like me, I'm sure. You know, like, Dawson Creek comes out, all the girls are talking about how they watched Dawson's Creek in 98. So I'm like, I'm going to buy a fucking sweater vest, and I'm going to put it over my white t-shirt and my fucking khaki pants, and, you know. So I did that whole thing. Meanwhile, I'm listening to grunge music and Korn, and like, I didn't know who the hell I was. I was just trying, like, to be everything. And you see, like, Jim and all these guys wearing all that shit, and it looks absurd now, but it's like, that's what we fucking did, man. That's what we wore.
Maybe I should have thought more like that in high school, because I didn't do that, but I just
would you wear just OR scrubs all the time?
No, that was senior year that started. No, I just wore a lot of I think I could count on like one hand the number of times I wore a shirt to school that had a collar on it and or had long sleeves. It was always just t-shirts and jeans, like always.
Yeah, I get that.
Sometimes they'd be wrestling shirts, like if I went to a wrestling show.
Oh yeah, that's true. I did that too. Yep. I mean, wrestling was huge back then too. Yeah. All right, so I'm sure there's other parts of this movie we can talk about. I know this is we're on the shorter end here, but anything else that you could think of that we need to bring up on American Pie?
Well, we kind of talked about the origin. I don't know. One thing I thought when I was watching this that I noticed, and it's stupid, but it was like Jason Biggs was sweating all the time. And it was because they filmed this movie in like a warehouse in Southern California that had no air conditioning. And at one point, he actually got heat stroke when they were filming it. So like, so that scene where Finch is playing golf and he's talking to Kevin about the bet and like to like in the spirit of the wager, like just whatever you hear, you agree. Like Jim was supposed to be in that scene and they just didn't put him in it because he had heat stroke.
Holy shit!
Like I think this movie, a lot of it was. When you think about when you watch it now and you just, it kind of looks like, it doesn't even look like a, and this, again, I know I've been a little like more critical of this movie than some of the other ones we've done, but when you watch it again, it's like, it seems like it's a bunch of vignettes that are connected by a theme. It doesn't really feel like one movie. And the movie's short, it's like 90 or 95 minutes or something. And you don't really spend a lot of time with any one character. Like Jim's probably the closest thing you get to a main character, which as you pointed out was kind of interesting because they made Kevin, the Thomas Ian Nicholas character, like the leader of the group.
Right.
But he wasn't like the leader of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, I mean, he creates the pact. He's the only one who has the relationship. So they have to spend time on that. He's the one who starts the whole to the next step thing, which they carry out through each movie at the end. They cheers their sodas and whatever. Like, all that stuff was all Kevin. And I just feel like it's almost like how, like with The Simpsons, it was like, it's the Bart Simpson show. And then they realized, holy shit, people like Homer way better than Bart. And then Homer became the main character of The Simpsons. It's sort of like that on, obviously, a smaller scale because you're dealing with four movies or whatever. But I did find that interesting in watching this because in the second one, Kevin still has a solid part. But it's like a reset because it's like him and Victoria battling with coming back and whether they still like each other or not. But then the third one, he's almost like completely cast aside. Like I would say he has like six lines and he's not even like a big part of it. They don't even have Oz back in that one. He comes back in the fourth one. So they realized Stifler needs to be a big part of this because of the humor, and Sean William Scott, arguably out of all these people, probably wound up having the biggest career, I would say. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think overall, but I mean, his career really took a shit after that Bulletproof Monk movie came out.
Yeah, true. Goon kicked ass, though.
He was kind of out of the mix for years. Like, was he as out of the mix as Jason Biggs was or Eddie K. Thomas? Probably not.
Yeah, but Daisy Biggs was like, let me do a Woody Allen movie.
I think Natasha Lyonne probably had the biggest career out of any of them.
Oh, I meant the four main guys.
Oh, okay.
Or the five guys. But, yeah, so they knew they had to, like, amp up Stifler and keep him, like, a part of it. But then I think there was, like, Jim and Stifler, and then everyone else could be sort of peppered in. Because, like, with Finch and stuff, it was almost like it sort of resets with him and his conquest for Stifler's mom again and... all that sort of shit, but so it is funny watching the first American Pie again, and you could just watch, you know, the first American Pie and not even worry about the sequels. It's, you know, sort of coming of age movie. It's a raunchy rated R comedy, has some level of heart, but again, as which I'm glad you brought up, because I didn't know that, the pivot of the Jim's dad character. Who knows if we're talking about this movie if they don't do that? And I mean that. I'm not just saying that to mean that, because you need to have the endearing element of the movie. And I think, you know, aside from them realizing the faults of their ways of just trying to get laid and finding things in earnest, that is the Jim's dad and Jim thing is stuff people, I feel like, still talk about, and other shows and movies probably try to emulate those awkward relationships since then. So I think that was definitely a big part of the success of the movie.
Yep, I'm with you on that. I think, yeah. That was, like, one of the things when I was watching this that, again, I know I already said it, but just it didn't seem like anybody had too big of an influence on the movie, because you didn't spend too much time with anybody.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like the movie was, you know, it was like, it's just when you read about the history of it, it was like, it was a bunch of virtually unknown actors working for peanuts. A lot of them were just happy to be there. And then, like, the way it was shot, and, like, I think the movie was shot in relatively short order. I don't, you know, there was, you know, small budget. You know, you mentioned, I think it was $10 or $11 million, and it ended up making, like, hundreds of millions. So it was, like, this big sleeper hit, and it was, like, I don't know. Like, even the people on the inside didn't have faith in it. That, so it's just kind of interesting to see how it played out. It became this kind of... I don't know if I would call it. I thought one thing that was interesting is, like, when we do this, you know, we both get pretty deep in, like, all the reading and stuff, and, like, all the things that have been written about a movie over the years with the benefit of hindsight. And for a movie with this much, like, that level of financial success, that level of pop culture relevance, there really isn't a lot of stuff about it. Like, I came across a couple random articles, but most of them have been condensed into, you know, what you could read it on the usual sources. I was really surprised that there wasn't an oral history about American Pie, and they, like, went and talked to, like, because I'm sure a lot of those actors have plenty of free time to talk about being an American Pie,
especially this movie with its oral history.
Baby.
What an asshole.
I was watching, dude, the one scene that, like, maybe you'll get mad at me, but, like, I was thinking about, like, if you were in the one scene where, like, Kevin's handing out condoms and you're there, like, what are we, sailors? What are we gonna use these for? I'm like, what, Johnny would not be having that.
I like that every once in a while we make up things on this podcast, you know?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we're creating insanity. It was like when I was talking about, you know, the stuff with the hotel maids earlier. Like, you know, it's,
right, exactly.
That didn't happen.
Right.
No charges were squashed.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that is a part of it that we didn't even really talk about, is that you know, it's based on the writer's experience going to high school in East Grand Rapids, Michigan. You said you know elements of Michigan well, obviously Ohio not too far. Is there anything about, you know, it seems very, you know, middle America, you know, not having its own, you know, physical identity, anything about this movie that resonates with you from a location perspective, region perspective?
I mean, not really. It was just some little autobiographical detail I threw in there. Like, there was a really famous hot dog restaurant that they used in this movie. Okay. They changed the name of it, but I've never been there because I don't eat hot dogs for a variety of reasons. But
does that Do you have any idea if that restaurant capitalized on the fame of the movie and had like pictures in the of the?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, Obama used it as a campaign stop.
Did he?
Yeah. It's this place called Yesterdog in East Grand Rapids. And in the movie, they called it Dog Years. But it was based on that, but I don't think it was filmed there. I think the whole movie, I don't think any of the movie was filmed in Michigan. Because the working title was East Great Falls, which was the name of the high school where the kids went.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
then some studio heads got involved, like, we need to get on the ground floor of this pie thing.
Oh, yeah. So I'm reading now it was filmed in Long Beach, California.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that hence the sweating and all that. Yeah. Very interesting. It looks like filmed in very similar locations to Ferris Bueller, which now you think about the bushes and the hedges and the housing styles. That makes sense, too. You know, and I've said it before. People love Ferris Bueller, and I don't think that movie's all that great. But this was our Ferris Bueller, man. This was our era's Ferris Bueller. And I think the lasting thought I have on that is what we brought up earlier as to, you know, with teenagers of today watch American Pie and feel any sort of reverence for it the way we were instructed to feel about Caddyshack or, you know, the movies before our time that are considered, you know, must watch classics.
I'm not as with you on the Caddyshack take as I am the Animal House take.
Yeah. I think you're right. I misspoke.
No. I mean, if that's your opinion, that's your opinion. But I think Caddyshack's a way funnier movie than Animal House was.
No, you're right. I agree with that 100%.
Animal House was one of those things. It was like you went to college and all of a sudden it became like required reading. It's this is what we're doing in college. It's like, no, it isn't.
Right.
We're not having 12-year-olds at our parties. Nobody's doing that.
You need a copy of Animal House. You need to.
You've got to have the poster with the sweater that says college. It's like we're all idolizing a guy who fucking died way too young because he partied too hard. Like,
That and
very short-sighted.
Whatever the most expensive edition of DVD of Scarface that came out, you needed to have that in your collection too, among others. So, but American Pie also, you know, last thing on that, you know, it came out around the time of the DVD boom. And this movie made bank in rentals. I mean, I was working at the video store, and this movie was always not available. And I believe we had this version and the unrated version. And I remember people wanted to come see the unrated version or rent the unrated version. And then the DVD sales like blew up on this too. So this movie just was insanely profitable. I mean, just from the box office run alone. And then, you know, word of mouth. And then, of course, the DVD sales and rentals, which doesn't exist today.
Sidebar. You know? Can you think of one time where you've watched a movie and then they release either an alternate cut or like and you watched it and you were like, I know the answer to this now that I'm asking you. Justice League. Like the Snyder cut of the Justice League, right? You liked it a lot better than the original, which I don't know if that's fucking saying anything, but
it's not saying anything. I was in the theater watching. I probably said this on the pod, so I apologize if anyone's like, "Oh, heard it," but I remember it being the theater for Justice League, the theatrical version, the Joss Whedon version, and the first scene is Superman being interviewed by somebody, and it's the digital. They use the digital whatever to wipe out Henry Cavill's mustache, and it looks fucking horrible. Like, horrible. Not like I'm gonna be overcritical about a superhero movie horrible. Like, it looked fucking terrible, and I was like, this movie's gonna suck ass, and it did. So that one is a bad example, I think, because Zack Snyder could have taken a shit and it would have been better than Justice League. So
I mean, are there any other examples like come to mind? I mean, it's tough because like Blade, like we made this joke a few times, but like there's like 18 cuts of Blade Runner, like
so many different endings too. Yeah,
yeah.
Now you mean like an unrated version with more scenes, or like a director's cut? That's better. I don't know, because it's amazing what editing can do to a movie. Like So you always talk about this repository that we have, thanks to a friend who is generous to allow access to these movies, but he had downloaded some weird cut of Mallrats instead of the theatrical cut, and it's like a completely different movie. It's bizarre how different it is.
Yeah, I know it didn't age too well for you, but I still really have a great affinity for Orgasmo, and there's an alternate version of Orgasmo, and it's not even close. Like, if you thought the original cut of Orgasmo didn't hold up well, like, you probably wouldn't even have made it through the alternate cut of it. It was brutal.
Is it a drama in the alternate cut? No. Like at the end, Joe Hung just shoots himself. His wife leaves him for the stunt cock. Oh, okay.
No, but like it just goes into your point. Like so much of the stuff was changed, and the music was changed, and it's just like it didn't even feel like the same movie.
Yeah, it's like editing's crazy. They can really manipulate the final cut of a movie. That's why editors are just so important to. The flow of a movie and the narrative and all that comes with it. But in the end, you know, I guess my final thoughts on American Pie, you know, we there's plenty of more scenes we could have talked about, but at that point we'd just be doing, you know, full rehash. But I think we touched on, you know, the bigger points. But I think my final thoughts on it are it's, you know, a solid coming of age rated R comedy that paved the way for that next generation of movies that came out thereafter, letting Hollywood know that R-rated comedies are still bankable. And it's still fun. You know, like I said, maybe I've aged out of a lot of its humor, but I think parts of it that still ground it, and I believe the relationship between the friends, and it's still a good fun time.
Yeah, I really like the connection you made with I didn't even think of that. You know, I thought about some of the other movies that came before this and how this became kind of like a more raunchy spin on the like repopularization of teen movies, but I didn't even think about the whole thing about the bankability of the R-rated comedy.
Yeah, cuz then, you know,
like if this doesn't come out, we definitely don't get Road Trip the next year.
Road Trip, Old School, Wedding Crashers, Hangover, yeah. I mean, someone will probably do a better job than me and point out a movie that came out before American Pie that did it. But the one that stands out to me is American Pie, and I think that at least helped them say, like, oh, we can make bank still with an R-rated movie, get older teens, maybe people in their 20s, even adults in to watch it. So it paid off. It worked.
I don't know. Maybe not another teen movie, but I don't even know if that came out before this. And
that was
01. What?
Yeah. I think that was 01.
Yeah. Yeah. And even then, it's like it's not even the same style of film. It's a satire. Like, this is like an original comedy.
That movie sucks. Like
I think it's funny.
I know, but like I hate all those fucking parody movies. Like,
well,
I do.
Like, that was one of the first ones.
Yeah,
and then
after scary
that,
movies. Yeah.
Like the whole thing, in my opinion, like there was Scary Movie, and like people liked the first couple Scary Movies, and then Not Another Teen Movie, and then it just became a total just cookie cutter, just factory of sadness,
every genre
fucking
possible.
Cash grab.
Yeah, epic movie.
Yeah, Meet the Spartans. Ugh.
Yeah, exactly, and somehow they got Leslie Nielsen for all of them, and Chuck Sheen, but
Chuck Sheen.
Oh God, who do you think goes first, Magic Johnson or Charlie Sheen?
Oh man, Magic Johnson will be at my funeral. Just kidding. I mean, he won't be there, but I mean, he'll still be alive when I'm dead.
I'll invite him unless I go first. I will send a letter to Magic Johnson.
You have to at least see your kids off to college, then you can die. Like, I don't even have that kind of pressure on me.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. All right, dude. Anything else on American Pie?
No, I knew this would kind of be a short
all
one,
right.
But
wait, I gotta ask.
What's up?
Because you did the condom bit with me. Be honest for our audience. Ever try a fruit?
No. No, 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 no.
Me neither. I can safely say that. That's it. That's all I had.
Okay.
Right. So, Yeah, anything anything else? Nothing? No?
No, man. Like I said, I thought this would be kind of a short one. It's kind of breezy, kind of like the movie itself. But I think we covered a lot of important stuff. You made some really great points especially, so.
As did you, my friend.
Nah, I don't know about that.
I did not know about the whole Eugene Levy thing, and I think that really did shift a lot of my thoughts on how they put this thing together, so appreciate it. So what are we doing next, man?
So I'm having a really hard time coming up with something like what I, because I know we've done a couple comedies in a row now, and I started thinking about how February is like kind of like this cinematic wasteland. Like it's where they do, like that new Bob Marley movie is coming out in a couple weeks, so they probably have no faith in that whatsoever. So I want to try something a little experimental. It is a comedy. It's a satirical comedy, but it's, I don't know, a couple of our listeners have expressed joy that I know this movie exists. I don't think you've seen it, but I'd like you to give it a try, and I'd like to get your thoughts. It is a blaxploitation satire called Black Dynamite, starring Michael Jai White.
I have not seen that.
You definitely haven't, but I'm looking forward to having a spirited discussion with you, and if not, I have a lot to say about it. Like maybe it'll just be a fucking monologue. I'll just be and then John once in a while will just go, yeah.
All right, Michael Jai White. So was that Gamble from Dark Knight?
Yep.
Okay.
There's an alternate universe where Michael Jai White is like a star on the level of like Stallone or Schwarzenegger. Wow. It's not the world we live in. But I mean, he's ripped.
some other timelines. Denzel Washington.
He'd be more like an action star. But yeah, I mean, Denzel Washington is an action star. But like, I think he's also known for like kind of his more serious roles, like Malcolm X and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, man.
Denzel doesn't have five black belts.
Oh, okay. Well, here we are. Down to check it out. I haven't seen it. Is this the first movie we've done where I haven't ever seen it.
No, there was another one I kind of foisted on you. It's just, it's not coming to me, though.
Oh, was it The Raid? Maybe it was
Yes.
The Raid.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Which I liked. So we'll see. We'll see if Mike goes 2 for 2 here. All right, man. Sounds good. Anything else for our audience before we hop out?
Nah, man. Take us home.
All right. Hey, thanks, everybody. We appreciate you listening to the podcast. Hope you've been enjoying it. For your fellow friends who like movies the way you do and the way we do, spread the word. Just let them know. All I have to do is go to a podcast app and look up Just Like the Movies. You'll find the silhouettes of our ugly faces or our ugly profiles, and hit play and have fun as we revisit the movies we love. And of course, social media at Just the Movies on X, formerly known as Twitter. And I will be catching us up with a nice thread of all the movies we've done since my last post on Instagram. And then continue from there at Just Like the Movies Pod. And if you want to email us, justlikethemoviespod@gmail.com with any thoughts on the show, feedback. And of course, if you have any movies that you'd like us to do, not guaranteed that we're going to do them, but we're always open to hear as we barrel through our list entering year 4 of the podcast. But Mike, it's been a pleasure as always, and from us here at Just Like the Movies, please be sure to be kind, rewind, relax, and we'll see you around.
Suck me beautiful.